But in our nation, often cereal foods are an important part of breakfast. Other times we just have toast and coffee. And in my case, I like toast and little scrambled eggs. That's a good thing for me to eat. Others of you are on fruit or fruit smoothies. You do different things for eating in the morning. One of the times that is rare to us is to have steak and eggs. Sometimes when the feast comes around, we might have some steak and eggs. And that's really special when you have steak and eggs. Any of you ever have steak and eggs for breakfast? Who hasn't had steak and eggs for breakfast? Few of you? Well, we'll have to invite you over sometime. Well, while we enjoy various things for breakfast, eggs, cereals, and so forth, and you think of steak and eggs, I bring to you some little simple thought. You have steak, you have eggs. How did that all get together? Well, the chicken laid an egg. Or three. Somebody took mushrooms and maybe some onions, maybe some other stuff, so that you could put it in the middle of the eggs and call it an omelet. The steak, where did that come from? Well, we all know that the cow just gave up a hind quarter and is now a tripod, right? Walking around on three. Well, no, for the steak to come about, the cow had to give its life. So when it comes to steak and eggs, it's important to realize when it comes to the eggs, the chicken is involved. Now, about the steak, the cow is committed. He has to give everything to give you the steak. Today I'm going to speak to you about personal commitment. And I want you to see it balanced as we go through this with the word involved as compared to committed. Sometimes in life we're involved with things. It might be a little exercise program that we're involved with. But other times we're very committed to an exercise program and it goes on year after year after year. Now, commitment is a promise to do or give something. That's a promise that you're going to keep. Another definition is a promise to be loyal to someone or something. Or the attitude of someone who works very hard to do or support something. You might be a volunteer with some program and you might be working very hard without pay, giving of your own time. Because you feel. Now, some examples of commitment that I found in the dictionary, little sentences that help us make a better definition, such as, we've got commitments from several charities to donate food and clothing. Commitments to donate. The government's commitment of troops to the region. Right now, that's very topical in our news, isn't it? Or the church has a commitment to help the poor. It's a very important part to keep up the thoughts in our lives as we look at James 1:27, a commitment to the poor. Another one, the boss noticed her strong commitment to her work. And so there's a strong commitment. The boss recognizes that. The last sentence, no one doubts your commitments to the cause. We want to be very committed in many of our parts of our lives, and yet there's times when we are only involved. I was reminded about this from an example of taking a plane or airplane, a jet, off of the runway. A pilot has a plane at takeoff when he is committed to fly and no longer taxi. We need to ask ourselves from time to time, are we committed to flying or riding when we're on the different runways of life? Sometimes in our life, we are only involved. We're not committed. I want to go through some biblical examples of commitment. First, going through all these subjects, I think, are well-founded, but they bring this example home very strongly. The first one is Noah in Genesis chapter 6. Here we find in verse 3, "The Lord said, My spirit will not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120. And it says in verse 7 that he was sorrowful, repented of him, that he had made man of the earth, and yet grieved him at his heart. So there was a commitment that he thought would have been made by mankind that wasn't. Then when we go over into chapter or verse 17, "Behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth, to destroy all flesh wherein is the breath of life, from under heaven and from everything that is in the earth, they shall die." This is a very difficult thing to accept, I think, for us. And God said everything would die. Then it says in the last verse of that chapter 6, "Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he." And so, as you know, Noah and his family ate. And you might just think about their family scenario when it comes to commitment and involvement. It appears that for all those 120 years, there was a strong commitment from Noah. And I think with ease, we'll just say that applied to the whole family. But were they all committed to the godly way? When the ark rested, they came out. There was not an obedience to God in all ways and in their activities. Sin was part of their lifestyle still. They weren't committed to a sinless lifestyle. They were involved with it, and it brought them through the flood with safety. And so when we read in chapter 7, verse 1, "The Lord said unto Noah, Come you and all your house into the ark, for you have I seen righteousness before me in this generation." That was the righteous man. "Of every clean beast you shall take by sevens, and male and female, beasts that are not clean by two, the male and his female." And did I tell you about why Noah didn't go fishing? No? Only had two worms. Thank you, Rita. Thank you, Evan. Okay, one more. You know why they didn't play cards on the, or why Noah didn't play cards? He's standing on the deck.
Bada boom, bada bing.
Yeah, bada boom, bada bing. No more encores just yet. "So in 7 days, verse 4, I will cause it to rain upon the earth 40 days and nights. And every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth." Now what do we have today? We got all kinds of people thinking they've understood this and that about the flood. Some know where the ark is. Some are searching for the ark. Some say, everybody's wrong. I know where the ark is. Some say, well, I don't know how that would have happened. That would have been so much water that where would it have all gone? Where would it have all come from? And they totally miss the point that God is committed to those who are committed to Him. That's the point. The story is interesting. It's wonderful. It's the stuff kids' evenings are made of when you put them to sleep. But we need to remember God destroys those who are not committed to Him. That's the lesson. So this goes on to say then in 10, and it came to pass the waters of the flood was upon the earth. How much and where did it all go? I don't know. I just know that God is very much opposed to sin. He's committed to those who will keep His ways. Now in the next example, Ruth chapter 1. Ruth 1, and you know the story of her and Naomi. Well, I get from Judges to Samuel, and in between is Ruth, isn't it? Judges and then Ruth. And in chapter 1, Ruth 1, now there it goes back to Kings. Ruth 1:1 came to pass in the days that there were judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, two sons Mahlon and Chilion. And these two boys had taken wives. And then it says, in 3, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left with her sons. They had taken these wives, and they find that they died in verse 5. And so she's going to go on with her life. And she decides that it's best to go back to the land of Judah where she had come from. And she says in 8, Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, go return each to her mother's house, and the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may rest, each of you, in the house of your husband, of her husband. And they kissed, and she told them to go on. And they said unto her, surely we will return with you to your people. And you know, as the story goes on, that finally there is a separation between the two daughters-in-law. And that the one says, okay, I'll stay. But in 14, and they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave to her. And she said, behold, your sister-in-law is going back to her people. Return you. And Ruth said, I entreat me not to leave or to return from following after you. For where you go, I will go. When you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. When you die, where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me, and much more, if aught but death parts us. So when Naomi saw that she was steadfastly minded, she quit trying to talk her out of it. So the two and they became a household unit in Judah. Now today we live in an age where there's far more interest in divorce than maintaining a relationship with your family. It's interesting that it talks about mother-in-law and daughter-in-law being a household here. They were not interested in separating and coming to different ways of life. They were interested in this way, and Ruth was very interested in commitment. Commitment to her adopted mother or mother-in-law, Naomi. Now this brings an example to us that is germane to your entire Christian life. Who has adopted you? Who is your mother that has taken you in? The church. It has taken you in. These stories are not so simple. They tell of us of a commitment. And through the example then of Noah and now on to this, when we are committed to our God, He is committed to us. So we have to ask ourselves about our lifestyles. Do they interfere with our commitment to God and to His congregations? I have to ask about my lifestyle. I've got things in my bones that still need to change. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. And it's very difficult from time to time. The older you get, the harder it is. But we have change that we must make. I think some of us might remember the fishermen disciples as examples of commitment. They say that some of the loneliest women in the world are those who are married to men who are dedicated to fishing and hunting. You've seen the bumper sticker, "I'd rather be fishing." And there's a lot of people with troubled households because there's more interest in going outside in the wild than in taking care of the wild business in the home. Well, these disciples were fishermen, and it talks of them in Matthew chapter 4 and other places, but let's turn to Matthew 4. Just a few verses, 18 through 22. Matthew 4, verses 18 through 22. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw the brothers, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net in the sea, for they were fishers. He said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two others, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, in a ship with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called. And immediately they left the ship and their father and followed him. A commitment to a new way of life, being fishers of men, giving up the fly cast and the net to go out and find a way that is completely different. The disciples left their commitment to fishing and livelihood and took on a new commitment to be fishers of men with Jesus Christ. This tells us that when we are finding a calling, we must be committed to that. Christ called them. And in your life, you are called. I was called to these ways. I found myself wondering, is this the true way? I had grown up in it since I was about 5. But the question had to be answered. I had to know what I was doing was the right thing. So I made my investigations. And I knew then that this was right. And I acknowledged that I was being called. And it was a significant time in my life. I was a young fella. But things then changed. And the change has been good. It has been continual. But that comes with commitment. And you think about your life. When you have been committed, you find that there has been commitment towards you. The other example I want to use as far as commitment is the woman Esther. You can turn into Esther 4 and chapter 5, 6, and 7. I'm not going to read through the story. I think you know it well. Esther was chosen to be groomed as a young maid to be the queen. There are many others that were in that same harem. But she was, in the fact, finally chosen. And then it comes to her uncle, Mordecai, that there is this injunction to kill all the Jews. Mordecai is very sad and doesn't want to tell her about it. But finally she figures it out. And she wants to tell the king what is going on with Haman, known as this wicked Haman, and what he has devised to do. So she sets about inviting the king to come to his to her a banquet, and he said he'd give her anything up to half the kingdom. And finally, when she gets into the chamber and finds the opportunity and tells them of Haman's problem, trying to kill all the Jews, this just enrages the king, because here this woman is part of those to be killed. And he goes out, and when he comes back in, here's Haman fumbling around, trying to make some advancement, perhaps, to Esther. This irritates the king even further, and so Haman is finding himself hanging and being killed. And so the Jews, which were in threat of annihilation, because they were committed to God's way, and symbolic then of us, they found the relief that they needed. And her commitment was so strong that Esther said, well, let's fast for 3 days and nights so that we know what God wants to do. Now, we need to apply these examples in our lives. Commitment is very important to me and to you. It implies a point of no return, no compromise, no regression. Now, there's times in life when I compromise. I might have that not in common with you, right? There's all of us, I think, understand compromise. Now, when Christ died, it says in John 19, verse 30, that his last three words were, "It is finished." He was committed to the goal, and when he was finally at that point where there was going to be the finality of life, he said, "It is finished." He had reached his goal. He was committed all the way to the end. Now, commitment does require sacrifice. And that sacrifice often means going beyond the call and duty. There are things that we need to do that we don't even think about, but if we're committed, we'll make some changes. You consider Noah and his family. Some may change. Noah did not have to change. He was committed. Remember the story of the fellow who says, "What may I do to get into the kingdom of God?" And Christ's response is, "Keep the commandments." "Well, which?" And he says, "Well, you know, the Ten Commandments." And he said, "Well, I've done all those things. What more do I need to do?" And he says, "Give all of your treasure, all of your good things to the poor." And he couldn't do that. He wanted to be involved with Christ in the teachings, but he wasn't committed. Now, commitment is associated with great reward. In the last book of the Bible, Revelation 20, verses 4 through 7, it talks about commitment resulting in reward. Revelation 21, verse 4. You know this section well, but it has a particular three-word complement that we need to focus on today. "God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these things are true and faithful. And he said to me, It is done." Commitment requires that we have that mindset that we're going to go on until it is done. He says, "I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. And he that overcomes shall inherit all things. I will be his God, and he shall be my son." So when you find yourselves involving your life, as I involve my life with making a change of pace, we have to be committed to that to the point where we'll do it to the very end. So when we think about this, it's somewhat like the chicken and the eggs, the steak and the cow. It's very important that we think about those things. And I've got a few little one-liners. A change of pace so that you can let your mind refresh for a moment. Why did the rubber chicken cross the road? She wanted to stretch her legs. Why did the Roman chicken cross the road? She was afraid someone would seize her. Why did the chicken cross the playground? To get on the other slide. Why did the turtle cross the road? To get to the Shell station. You see the commitment that is there? It's a simple little thing, but the turtle needs the shell. What do you need? A better life than you have, a better life than I have. And so like the turtle crossing the road for the shell, you need the protection. You need to move in that direction. Why did the horse cross the road? Well, the chicken needed a day off. Wasn't committed. Just wasn't committed. Now, maybe you're a duck. Why did the duck cross the road? To prove he wasn't a chicken. Are we chickens about our commitment? Are we committed? Why did the cow cross the road? He wanted to get on the other side. See, we all have roads that we have to be committed to. My road is not your road. They are common and they should all be going in the right direction, the forward march. So we might be like the elephant that crossed the road. You know what happened? He stepped on the chicken. Little thoughts along the way. Indeed, commitment is much more than involvement. There are times in life when commitment seems like you're up against the wall, just unable to go forward. I want to read to you a story about a man who was appointed to be a writer in Jerusalem for his bureau newspaper, or at the bureau for his newspaper, the Jerusalem Bureau. He got an apartment overlooking the Wailing Wall, and after several weeks, he realized that whenever he looked out the wall, he saw an old man praying vigorously. The journalist wondered whether there was a publishable story here. So he goes down to the wall and introduces himself to the man and says, "You come here every day to the wall. What are you praying for?" And the old man replies, "In the morning I pray for world peace. Then I pray for my brotherhood of man. I go home, have a cup of tea, and then I come back to the wall to pray for the eradication of illness and disease from the earth." The journalist is taken by the old man's sincerity and persistence. He says, "You mean that you've been coming to the wall to pray every day for these things?" The old man nods, "Yes." "How long have you been doing this?" The old man says, "I don't know, 20, 25 years. I've been coming to the wall every day." The journalist says in his amazement, "How does it feel to come to this wall and pray every day for over 20 years for all these things?" The old man says, "Well, what do you mean? How does it feel?" I says, "Well, that's what I want to know. How does it feel?" He says, "It feels like I'm talking to a wall." Commitment is sometimes like that. You might find that you're at a wall, but you have to keep going. There are times in life when the tests are as difficult as Noah's. He had all of these relatives, seven, who were involved with him that would bring him lumber, follow the plan, but weren't really involved or committed. They were only involved. Marriage is a very important topic to most of us. Marriage is what happens after involvement. Now, sometimes in our Christian walk, we begin with an involvement. Just like the girl that you dated for a while, off and on, bought her ice cream. You went with him and you graciously accepted anything he'd give you, whatever the situation might have been. But finally, the question is popped, and you say, "I do," or he says, "I will." And then there is marriage, a commitment for life. Now, there is times in life when it gets too difficult. And it says that that will happen. And it usually happens because, as the Bible says, or Christ says, because of a hardness of heart. Could you be more involved with the world than committed towards God? We must consider our commitment to God, to His congregation that He has called us to, our relationship with Him and the congregation. We must come to realize that God wants us to be committed. Our family relationships require commitment. And the prodigal son is an example of that. You take the child back, even though they might have been very offensive and had a very difficult behavior. With our spouses, our children, our extended family, commitment is sometimes very difficult, what people have dealt us. But we must be committed. In conclusion, I want to read to you a short poem. I got this out of the Urban Dictionary. And it is an example of commitment. It says, "Commitment is what transformed the promise into reality. It is the words that speak boldly of your intentions and the actions which speak louder than your words. It is making the time when there is none, coming through time after time after time, year after year after year. Commitment is the stuff character is made of, the power to change, to face the things. It is the daily triumph of integrity over skepticism." Now, you are capable of, and bad, it's because you've been called to be a people of commitment. It's not always an easy road, and we don't always find that it's a fantastic road. It isn't always with bells and whistles and pearls and gold. It might be a rather simple life, as people judge life. But commitment has to do with eternity. Let's hold hands and go there together, committed as the people of God.